WCFW FM Chippewa Falls, a civic media radio station with the best of the 80s, 90s, and more. 105.7 CFW.
This is InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's what's happening on this week's show.
Last year, hundreds of thousands of Americans died from drug and alcohol abuse, yet few of these people received treatment. New technology offers a way to provide substance abuse interventions when they're most needed.
About 1 in 6 Americans battle with a substance use disorder every year, but only 6% of those with a substance use disorder actually receive any treatment at all.
Then, how many older Americans are ready for retirement? A planning expert shares what to do in the years leading up to your retirement.
Ideally, I wish people would start 10 years out and every year do a thorough review. But the reality is most people get serious about thinking about the retirement planning about 5 years away from when they would like it to happen.
Stay tuned. InfoTrack begins right after this.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
No one knows the importance of a great assist more than Lowe's and Leo Messi. That's why we've teamed up to give My Lowe's Rewards members 10 times the points when Messi makes an assist during CONMEBOL Copa America USA 2024. Activate this offer starting June 20th, so when Messi assists, you score. Shop the day after an assist to earn those extra points. Not a My Lowe's Rewards member? Join for free today.
Every business faces challenges, but complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping shouldn't be one of them.
With USPS Ground Advantage from the United States Postal Service, you can avoid all the noise.
No more unexpected surcharges, hidden fees, or complex rate structures.
It's just easy, cost-effective, and dependable shipping. Tune your business's frequency to success and turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
Summer's just getting started, so fill your cooler with the smooth and refreshing taste of Twisted Tea Hard Iced Tea. It tastes like real iced tea because it's made with real brewed tea. And with a 5% kick of alcohol, Twisted Tea is perfect for the beach, the lake, or wherever you're hanging out and day drinking with your friends. Look for the bright yellow cans. Twisted Tea Hard Iced Tea. Keep it twisted.
Twisted Tea Brewing Company, Cincinnati, Ohio. Please drink responsibly.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
How can a mobile app be used to treat substance use disorders? Recent research explores the question, and joining us to talk about this is Michael Bucinell, PhD, co-director of the TSED Health Promotion Research Center, a program of the University of Oklahoma Health Sciences Center. Michael, how do mobile health interventions compare in effectiveness to traditional in-person treatments?
Mobile health interventions are in its infancy. Many studies are being done currently, but you know, we're building the evidence for these types of interventions. These mobile health interventions have many advantages over in-person interventions. For instance, you don't have to go and see a counselor necessarily. These mobile health interventions are often automated on a person's smartphone. Importantly, about 1 in 6 Americans battle with a substance use disorder every year, but only 6% of those with a substance use disorder actually receive any treatment at all. Part of this lack of treatment is because there's many barriers that prevent people from receiving these types of substance use disorder treatments. For instance, transportation, inflexible work schedules, costs, and there is a substantial lack of the necessary folks who can provide these treatments. This was the case even before COVID, and it's become an even bigger problem since COVID.
Now, I understand there's some things such as a biochemical verification method So, for example, if someone is trying to quit smoking, it detects carbon monoxide. Can you talk about that? That sounds pretty advanced.
Yes. We've had these carbon monoxide devices for decades. People who smoke cigarettes, because they're inhaling tobacco smoke, they have more carbon monoxide in their expired breath than people who are non-smokers. And that level of carbon monoxide can be detected by having a person blow into this device. Now, these devices traditionally have been very expensive, anywhere between $800 to $1,200. Newer device in the last 5 or 6 years has created a $65 device that you can pair with a smartphone, and the person can blow into this device whenever requested by the app to verify if they're still smoking or not. This is a really important point. Because of all the stigma we have around smoking these days, people are not always honest about whether they've quit or not. So if you ask somebody, have you quit smoking? They don't always tell you the truth. They may say, yeah, I've quit, but they slip every now and then, but they don't mention that. So because of this stigma, we need to biochemically verify or verify that the person has actually quit and these types of research studies, because governments spend billions of dollars on developing new treatments, and we want to make sure the treatment works before it's put out to the general population.
Does a mobile health app allow interventions, let's say daily, weekly, monthly, rather than just at the end of the trial?
Yes. Traditionally, the way we do clinical trials and research is a person is randomized to either receive treatment A or treatment B, or a control. This is the way drug trials are done as well. So a person receives that treatment, they're assigned to receive that treatment, and for 6 months or 12 months, however long the intervention goes, they're in that treatment. And then at the end of the study, we test to see if they're still using the substance or if they're still smoking, for instance. With smoking research, if a person doesn't quit right around their start date within a couple of weeks, it's very unlikely that they're going to be able to successfully quit at the end of the 6 months. It doesn't mean that they can't, you know, get back on the wagon and try again, but we know that the odds are low that a person who doesn't quit on their quit date or shortly thereafter is going to struggle to quit in that quit attempt. So with mobile health, these apps can randomize a person to a treatment. And if that one doesn't work, 2 weeks later, they blow in the carbon monoxide device and it randomizes them again to a different treatment. And we potentially could keep trying different treatments until we find one that works for them.
Our guest is Michael Bucinel, PhD, co-director of the TSET Health Promotion Research Center, a program of the University of Oklahoma Health Sciences Center. And we're talking about mobile apps being used to treat substance use disorders. Michael, how do you ensure the privacy and security of the user's data in a mobile health intervention?
This is an important point. With the application that we have developed here at the University of Oklahoma Health Sciences Center, the app is encrypted and these data are used for research studies. So that protects the person's data. Any question they answered is encrypted, and only encrypted data are sent to our server. However, that's not the case for many apps that are available on app stores. You have to read those fine details about whether these apps will sell people's data or share these data with others. For, you know, research or for medically developed FDA type applications, these data are generally protected and encrypted.
We've talked about stopping smoking as one treatment area. What other substances would be measured with the mobile health technology?
Really, the sky's the limit. I've conducted trials that are trying to help people reduce or quit cannabis use or marijuana use. Same thing for alcohol. Other interventions have been developed for cocaine and methamphetamine. Although the trials for smoking cessation are well beyond, this work has been going on for decades. Compared to other types of substances, smoking, we have something that's readily detectable. So you can detect carbon monoxide in a person's expired breath. It's more difficult to detect things like cocaine or methamphetamine in expired breath. I think that these things can be done in the future. It's just we need attention and effort paid to developing these types of sensors. Alcohol breathalyzers have been around for a very long time. Police use them, you know, in DUI checks.
If someone listening wants to use this software, How can they access it, or does this have to be prescribed by a doctor? How does that work?
Well, usually these studies currently are research studies. So in order to participate, the person would need to enroll in a specific research study. There are apps that are publicly available. Some of them, few of them, have been tested in large randomized controlled trials. Again, these mobile health interventions are in their infancy. A lot more work needs to be done to verify if they are effective and as effective as traditional in-person or phone-based counseling.
Well, speaking of that, what do you see as areas for future research in the mobile health app area?
Well, these mobile interventions, they're called just-in-time adaptive interventions, or JEDIs. They allow us to examine substance use in a much more rigorous way than has been traditionally done. Usually in clinical trials or in interventions, a person will either go see their counselor or do a phone call with their counselor once a week, maybe a couple times a week at the most. These mobile health interventions can assess substance use and success every day. What that means is we have to think about, how do we define success in an intervention, right? Is it the number of days the person was abstinent or didn't smoke or didn't drink? Or is it only if they were abstinent for the last 7 days at the 6 month follow-up? That's traditionally what we define as success. 7 days before the follow-up assessment, was the person not smoking or drinking? Whereas in mobile health interventions, we can look at how many days in the last 6 months the person smoked or drank or used other substances.
Michael Bucinel, PhD, co-director of the TSET Health Promotion Research Center, a program of the University of Oklahoma Health Sciences Center. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Next, how to plan for a successful retirement. That story coming up.
Stick around. There's more InfoTrack straight ahead.
Every business faces challenges, but complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping shouldn't be one of them.
With USPS Ground Advantage from the United States Postal Service, you can avoid all the noise.
No more unexpected surcharges, hidden fees, or complex rate structures.
It's just easy, cost-effective, and dependable shipping. Tune your business's frequency to success and turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
Whether you own a local business or a global one, you know that these days, generating growth is a challenge. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll not just stay ahead of the curve, you'll move it. With access to experts, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter, locally and globally. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Copyright 2024 Bank of America N.A.
4th of July appliance savings are happening now at the Home Depot. Save up to $2,400 on select kitchen packages from brands like LG, America's most reliable line of appliances. Get the LG French door refrigerator with Kraft Ice to keep your summer cool. Or upgrade to the LG Smart Top Load Washer with AI that selects optimal wash motions and settings. Get up to $2,400 off select kitchen packages at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Pricing valid June 19th through July 10th, U.S. only. See store online for details. America's most reliable line of appliances per independent study.
Summer's just getting started, so fill your cooler with the smooth and refreshing taste of Twisted Tea Hard Iced Tea. It tastes like real iced tea because it's made with real brewed tea. And with a 5% kick of alcohol, Twisted Tea is perfect for the beach, the lake, or wherever you're hanging out and day drinking with your friends. Look for the bright yellow cans. Twisted Tea Hard Iced Tea. Keep it twisted.
Twisted Tea Brewing Company, Cincinnati, Ohio. Please drink responsibly.
Now, InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
What should you do in the years leading up to your retirement? Taking the right steps ahead of time can make all the difference when it's time to retire. InfoTrack's Roy Mecki has the story. Roy?
Thank you, Chris. Our guest is Dana Anspaugh, founder and CEO of Sensible Money, and she's here to talk about the things that people approaching retirement should plan to do in the 5 or so years leading up to the big day. Dana, there are several bullet points that we'll touch on, so let's start with reevaluating how you want your retirement future to look. What does that mean?
Well, I think a lot of people don't plan for retirement because they don't have a clear vision of what retirement will look like. You have to have something you're retiring to. Now, I know that's not all the case. There's plenty of people out there who might be miserable at their job and they just want out. But what really motivates you to take that step is have something you're retiring to. And so you have to have done the work. I've known people who have taken a few weeks off to basically schedule a trial retirement. Sometimes the job might allow you to schedule down your hours gradually over a few years, but you need to experiment and really figure out what are you going to do with your time in retirement? Where's your sense of purpose and community going to come from? And that's what I think of when I think of that visioning process around what retirement will look like.
Another step is reviewing those financial and retirement plans. Where should that fall in that 5 years before retirement? Is it an annual thing, or how do you approach that?
Well, if you don't know if you can afford to retire, it's hard to create a meaningful picture of retirement. So I like that to fall. I mean, ideally, I wish people would start 10 years out and every year do a thorough review. But the reality is most people get serious about thinking about the retirement planning about 5 years away from when they would like it to happen. From that point on, it would be an annual process where every year you're measuring. You're going, okay, what year can I retire? How much money would come out of each account? What would that look like? And am I still on track? It brings you so much peace of mind if you do this on an annual basis as you're leading up to retirement. By the time you get there, it becomes, I'm not going to say stress-free, because I don't think it's possible. It's such a major transition. You're always going to experience stress, but as stress-free as possible. You're prepared, you're relaxed when you've done the planning.
Another word of your advice is to look over your portfolio and make adjustments. What adjustments are typical?
Well, I often share my own retirement plan when I'm discussing this. So I am currently 53. It's likely I'm going to work till 70 because I'm lucky and I love what I do. But just in case, I'm going to plan for an age 65 retirement. So right now, I'm 100% equity in all my retirement accounts because I have a long time frame ahead of me and I want to maximize my potential for return. But once you're in retirement, the goal of the portfolio changes. So the retirement portfolio that got you to retirement may not be the portfolio that is going to get you through retirement. Your goal once you're retired is regular, consistent cash flow, and market volatility can have a big impact on that. So what I plan on doing at 55 is, let's say at 65, I know I'm going to need $100,000 out of my retirement accounts. Well, at 55, I'll take $100,000 out of my equity portfolio and put it into a CD or a bond that's going to mature 10 years later. At 56, I'll do the same. At 57, I'll do the same. And by the time I get to age 65, I would now have a 10-year bond or CD ladder with $100,000 maturing each year that would allow me to ride out any market volatility or ups and downs that might occur right around the time I want to retire.
Should people still be in the stock market, though, once they get past 65 or 70? Some people, I think, are afraid of that risk.
No one likes to see their portfolio go down in value, and yet it's inevitable. It also happens with our housing market, but we don't get as concerned because we're going to live in our home. We're not planning on moving. So you need to think of your retirement portfolio the same way. There's a portion of it that you're going to need soon. And that's the part you need to calculate out and say, if I'm going to need to withdraw $50,000 out in 3 years, well, that portion should not be subject to stock market volatility. But there's a portion of your portfolio that needs to grow to keep up with inflation. And over the long term, a diversified equity portfolio, not betting on single stocks, but putting money into the stock market as a whole, has done an excellent job of helping you keep up with inflation. And when I say the stock market as a whole, you have to think of, you know, there's well over 10,000 publicly traded stocks around the globe. And over time, if you believe in capitalism, you know that those companies are going to adjust and continually work to make a profit. And so you're really saying, I believe over the long haul that these companies are going to become worth more. That's what their goal is, and I want to invest in them and watch my portfolio grow as that happens.
Our guest on InfoTrack is Dana Onspaugh, the founder and CEO of Sensible Money, and we're talking about steps that everyone should take in the 5 years or so leading up to retirement. retirement. This next one is one that I think many people underestimate. That's planning for healthcare and long-term care costs.
That is so true, particularly if you're going to retire before age 65. So at 65, Medicare kicks in if you have worked and earned enough here in the United States. And on average, it covers about 50% of your healthcare costs. Usually, you're going to pair that with either what's called a Medicare Advantage plan or a Medicare Supplement plan. And between those two, a significant portion of your healthcare costs are going to be covered. But if you're planning on retiring before age 65, you're going to have to cover that cost out of pocket. And on average, we would estimate that you're going to spend about $1,000 a month per person. Now, during that early retirement phase, there are some ways you may be able to structure your taxable income to qualify for something called the healthcare tax credit, but it definitely takes advanced planning. Then there's also the later stage of life where long-term care costs can kick in. You may need someone to come in and help with daily tasks like cooking or cleaning or being able to get dressed in the morning. So a portion of your portfolio will need to be reserved, or you'll need long-term care insurance to help cover those costs. Many people think that Medicare will pick that up, and it will only pick that up if you have certain pre-qualified events, such as a hospital stay that had to occur first. So many of the long-term care needs that we're going to experience later in life are things we're going to have to plan to pay for out of pocket.
And the final point is reviewing and paying off any remaining debts.
Well, it's interesting because we see a lot of people gear up toward paying off debt as they near retirement, and that makes sense, but not always. For example, many people have locked in interest rates that might be at 2.5%, 2.75%, 3.5%. That debt may not make as much sense to work really hard to pay off. We like to frame it in terms of your money, your values, your plan. And if you run the numbers first, you can see how much paying off that debt might save you. Now, in the example of high interest rate credit card debt or, you know, an auto loan that may be at a high rate, yeah, I think it does make sense to get that paid off as quickly as possible. But if it's low interest rate, long-term debt, you can run those numbers out and say, well, does it really make a difference? Most of the time, it's not going to make a big financial difference. But then you need to think about the value side of it. What just makes you feel better? And that's where we do find that even if financially I could say, well, you know, there's not a logical reason to focus on paying down that low interest rate debt. Some people just go, man, you know, if I could enter retirement and just know that that was off the table, my peace of mind, that sleep at night factor would be so high. And in those cases, then I think it can be worth paying down that debt, even if it is low interest rate debt.
Dana Onspaugh, the founder and CEO of Sensible Money, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.
4th of July appliance savings are happening now at the Home Depot. So upgrade with innovative appliance brands like GE Profile. Modernize your kitchen with a new GE Profile four-door French door refrigerator with hands-free auto-fill dispenser. And with the GE Profile ultra-fast combo washer-dryer, you can tackle large loads in about 2 hours. Save up to $2,400 on select kitchen packages with 4th of July savings at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Pricing valid June 19th through July 10th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
You might assume that young athletes would have low-risk health profiles, but a recent study revealed an area of concern. Here to discuss this is Anik Malik, MD, internal medicine physician at Olive View UCLA Medical Center in Los Angeles, and medical director of the Saving Hearts Foundation. Doctor, what was the health problem that was diagnosed among young athletes and prompted the need for the study?
So this data was actually collected at a heart screening event performed by Saving Hearts Foundation, for which I'm the medical director. And we basically go to local area high schools and we perform a number of different heart screening things, one of them being blood pressure. And what we found based off of analyzing these results over the last 4 years is that a substantial portion of people who we typically think of being really healthy, young individuals, not our typical schematic for people with high blood pressure, had a substantially higher rate than we anticipated of having high blood pressure.
What was the age range and the median age for the people in your study?
The age range was between 10 to 31 years old, and then the median age was 15 years.
Was there any difference between male and female athletes in the study?
Yeah, what we found was that men were at a significantly higher risk when compared to women, with 28.2% of men had qualifying blood pressure readings as either stage one or stage two, while women had 10.9% screening participants who had either stage one or stage two blood pressure readings.
I find it fascinating that some sports were associated with higher rates of hypertension. Can you tell us about that?
There's probably several factors that contribute to the higher rates of elevated blood pressures within the different sporting groups. This is one of those things where you should take caution with saying correlation is causation here. I don't necessarily think that those individuals who participate in, say, multiple sports where we saw the highest amount of elevated blood pressures, ironically, is a direct result of them participating in multiple sports. Rather, there's probably variations in individualized training habits. For instance, if you're playing football, maybe you're doing more weightlifting than you would in something like dance or gymnastics, which can maybe lead to increased body mass and potentially lead to an increased risk of higher blood pressures. There's also probably variations in the average body size of people playing different sports. For instance, a center in basketball versus someone who's playing tennis, dietary habits, social determinants of health, stress, genetics. There's probably all these combination of different factors here that are probably leading to these varying rates among different sports.
What are some of the potential long-term health implications for young athletes with undiagnosed or unmanaged hypertension?
Hypertension would be leading to a lot of things down the line here. So it's associated with increased risk of heart disease, whether that be an increased risk of a heart attack, increased risk of stroke, all these potential fatal complications as we age. Now, these things start when we're young and then typically manifest as we age and get older and older. So the longer that you're exposed to these high blood pressures, the higher the chance that you're going to develop one of these complications. So the fact that these athletes are having it at such a young age just shows that we need to start these interventions earlier, being able to identify, confirming that they actually have these elevated blood pressures that qualify for a hypertension diagnosis in a controlled setting, and then teaching these individuals, hey, we need to manage your stress better. We need to think about your diet a little bit better. Do these conservative measures so that we can start to teach them these appropriate lifestyle interventions to control this moving forward so that this doesn't stay uncontrolled and become a larger problem as we age.
In your research, you discussed stage one hypertension and stage two hypertension among the participants. What is the significance of those two stages? What's the difference?
Stage one is what we would consider to be more mild hypertension. It's those with an SBP or systolic blood pressure ranging from 130 over 140. That's your top number that we typically see on the reading, while stage two is anything above that, greater than 140. And stage two, obviously, as it would imply, is since you're having that higher blood pressure, you're at significantly increased risk when compared to stage one of developing those long-term complications if that's left unchecked. Whereas stage one hypertension would still place you at an elevated risk, but not quite meeting that risk profile of a stage two person.
Anik Malik, MD, internal medicine physician at Olive View UCLA Medical Center in Los Angeles and medical director of the Saving Hearts Foundation. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And that's it for this week's show. Our internet services are provided by Pear Networks. InfoTrack's executive producer is Randy Meyer, and I'm Chris Whitting. We hope you'll join us right here next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
80s, 90s, and more place in cyberspace. Download the Civic Media app. Look for CFW and stream us anywhere, anytime.
Mornings with Mike McKay and the best of the 80s, 90s, and more.
CFW.
Now I had the time of my life. No, I never felt like this before. Yes, I swear it's a truth. And I owe it all to you.
Rosa.
I've been waiting for I never felt this way before.
Never felt.
Yes, I swear it's the truth, and I hope it'll take you.
Thank you.
Easy for you to listen to 105.7 CFW wherever you work. Download the free Civic Media app. Find CFW, then stream us anytime, anywhere.
Do you have a loved one in a nursing home? California mega millionaire Eric Hovde has some bad news for you. He doesn't think they have long to live. It's true. In a recent interview, Hovde said, if you're in a nursing home, you only have a 5-6 month life expectancy. Almost nobody in a nursing home is at a point to vote. That's shocking. But it gets worse. One of Hovde's companies is named a co-defendant in a wrongful death suit from an incident at a California senior living facility. He even referred to himself as an expert in the nursing home business. Yikes, that doesn't sound like the kind of expert we need. Call Eric Hovde at his California office, 714-730-4444. Tell him that Wisconsin seniors deserve to vote and get the care they deserve. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Incorporated.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. A lot of financial chatter is focused on the stock market. Is it up? Is it down? Is it a bull market? Is it a bear market? The Dow just hit a record high. But how much should people like me and you really care about these daily updates? The answer? Not very much. Most of those daily highs and lows come from small-scale events that just don't mean that much to the broader U.S. economy. And the stock market is not the economy. For most of us, long-term growth is what really matters for retirement. Now, if you are one of the richest 10% of Americans who own 93% of all the stock, you can ignore this message. But for the rest of us, we're going to get more done by keeping an eye on our spending and savings than we are by paying attention to Wall Street. For more practical money tips, visit workmoney.org. Till next time, take good care.
The big winners are in for the Scotty Summer Contest.
Exciting. Let's listen to the calls.
Hi, who's this?
It's Tori.
You're one of our grand prize winners.
All right, man. Great to hear this morning.
We got some good news for you.
Okay.
You are one of our grand prize winners.
Really?
Yes.
Awesome. Winning is fun. Just ask Tammy from Baraboo and Tori from Kewaunee.
Thank you. That's great.
Listen for future chances to text and win on your local Civic Media radio station and the app.
Chippewa Valley Weather.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. A mix of clouds and sunshine today. Just a very slim chance of a late day shower or storm. Highs in the upper 70s, light northwest winds. In the overnight, mostly clear and upper 50s. Mostly sunny skies on Monday. Highs will reach the mid 80s. It's 57 at our studios.
CFW.
90s and more. CFW.
Miss independent, miss self-sufficient, miss keep your distance, miss unafraid, miss out my way. Miss, don't let a man interfere. No, miss on her own. Miss almost grown. Miss never let a man help her off her throne. So by keeping her heart protected, she'd never ever feel rejected. Little miss apprehensive said, ooh, she fell in love. What is the feeling taking over? Not to miss out on true love. So by changing her misconception, she went in a new direction and found inside she felt a connection. She fell in love. What is the feeling taking over?
chemist that kicked you around.